Hi, it's Dr. Weitz. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of the Private Medical Practice Academy. Today, I have Dr. Heather Signorelli with me, and I'm going to introduce Heather and let her tell about herself because she's got a very interesting story that I think is going to help all of us. Heather, welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation to come on. And so I am a pathologist by background. So, my love and focus has really been on the clinical laboratory side. So, you know, most pathologists, they come out, they look at slides under a microscope. And while I was trained to do that, my focus has really been on that clinical laboratory management. And today I oversee large healthcare systems, all of their hospital laboratories, which we've got close to 200 of those. And then, really have focused on the administration side. So whether that's running laboratories or managing the quality program, that's really where my love is. And then have also kind of just gotten into the business side of medicine just as part of that role. And because of that, we also started a medical billing company about a year ago. And so I'm here to answer any questions regarding all the fun things for labs.
And the name of your medical billing company is National Revenue Consulting.
You got it. National Revenue Consulting. And we're located here in Denver, Colorado, and it is snowing today. So we're getting our third or fourth snow for the season already.
That's awesome for all of us skiers who are wondering if there's going to be enough snow this year.
Yeah, it's already open. So come on out.
Sounds good. But meanwhile, let's talk about labs because a lot of docs in private practice obviously are looking for additional revenue streams. And pretty much all of us send out labs. And at some point in your career, you start to think to yourself, why am I sending labs out? Can I make money doing this? And so the first thing I wanted to get your insight into is the difference between CLIA waived and CLIA tests, and what makes a test a CLIA waived test versus what makes something a CLIA test, and what do docs need to be thinking about?
So I'm going to back us up. I'm going to start with CLIA, right? Everybody kind of hears these words and they're like, what the heck is CLIA? So CLIA is actually an improvement act. It's called the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Act. It was put into place in 1988. And really came out about because there were some deaths that happened because of false negative pap smears. So really had nothing to do with, you know, urine dipsticks or anything that we consider, you know, quote unquote, raved, you know, rapid streps. But because of those, that instance, it was decided that all laboratories, regardless of where they're done, regardless of, how simple they were, needed to be regulated. And so nowadays, like when you say laboratory, right, that can mean anything, any test that's done in a healthcare setting. So even though you may not have, say you're a practice, you're a clinic, you do rapid streps, and that's the only thing you do. Even though that's a test you offer in a healthcare setting, you are considered to have a lab. And it may not be a complex lab, but it is still a lab. And I think that that's important for everybody to understand. Because if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, do I need to worry about CLIA? I'm just doing a rapid strep or a rapid flu, like whatever. Unfortunately, yes, like you need to worry about CLIA. CLIA, it can be simple CLIA, right? It doesn't need to be this huge onerous thing of laboratory inspections and all of this rigmarole, but you need to understand what CLIA is. And you need to at least understand that there are CLIA certificates that you need to, potentially get depending on if you're running said tests. So just to make it simple, anybody who runs a laboratory test in a healthcare setting needs some sort of CLIA certificate. And we can kind of get into the different certificate levels here in a minute. But back to your original question, how do I know what's, CLIA waived or not? So I'll explain that there are waived tests and there are non-waived tests. So waived tests are things like your rapid strep. Right. And there's a whole list of waived tests. There's a huge number of waived tests. Even some of the point of care, chemistry analyzers, iStats, whatever, some of those can even be waived. Just depends. Non-waived tests are anything that's not waived. So, and there are different categories of non-waived tests. You'll hear the words moderately complex, highly complex, and those different categories, then determine the level of certificate you need, the type of staff you need running, and the type of policies and procedures you need to adhere to in the laboratory. So waived and non-waived, okay? And so I'm going to pause there and, you know, because I want folks to kind of settle that in, right? We've got waived, we've got non-waived, everybody needs to get a CLIA.
So basically, if I do any kind of, what I hear you telling me is if I do any kind of test in my office, all right, under the name of Dr. White's or Dr. Smith's general practice clinic, any tests that we do, we need to have some form of certificate.
Correct.
From CLIA.
Correct. And if it's just waived test, right, if it's just the rapid strep, and I'm just going to keep using that because it's an easy example, then you can get just a certificate of waiver. Now, there's still things you need to do to make sure you're in compliance with that certificate of waiver. You need to follow the manufacturer's instructions. Exactly. If you change, and I'll back up for a minute. So manufacturer's instructions, right? I mean, those are the things that come with the test. And those are the things that will tell you if this is waived, if this is moderate, if it is highly complex. Those little instructions are called IFUs, will tell you, the vendor will tell you, is this waived or not waived? And you have to use that as your guiding post, as your you know, source of truth. It's how they registered the test. Now, if you have a rapid strep and say it's waived, the vendor says, yeah, it's waived, but you decide to do something different than what's in the package insert. Your staff likes to do it differently and they don't follow the steps that are recommended. They want to do something differently. That no longer qualifies for that test to be waived. And so I highly recommend if you're bringing in a waived test, just follow the instructions exactly as they put it. Don't do anything different and you'll be fine. Get your certificate of waiver and, you know, follow good laboratory practices. You know, make sure that your staff are qualified to do wave testing, which is a huge list. It's very easy to do. That's the least complex testing certificate. You don't do your typical inspection, so it's easy peasy.
So can you guide us in the show notes, maybe give me a link to what we need in terms of our staff? And to that end, do we need actually dedicated staff or it can be an MA for a CLIA waived test?
Yeah, CLIA waived, and I can send in the show notes the requirements. CLIA waived doesn't really have many requirements. CLIA waived is very simple. Now, if you're doing provider performed microscopy, that's considered a moderately complex test. If you're doing anything that kind of gets into that moderately complex world, then you're no longer qualified to just have a certificate of waiver. You actually have to get a certificate of compliance. And so then that's when you have to start kind of adhering to some of the more complicated, and they're not complicated, you just have to read the regulations and make sure that, you know who can do the run the tests. And again, moderately complex tests, which you do see in physician offices, are not that hard to have your staff qualify. Most of your staff will qualify. It's when you get into the highly complex world. So think your mass specs for pain, you know, clinics or your, you know, chemistry instruments that you see in the hospital. That's when they have to be run by a med tech or somebody with certain laboratory expertise. And so most of your listeners are going to be in that certificate of waiver, maybe some moderately complex testing. Now, if you are doing provider performed microscopy, there is a specific certificate for that. And you do want to make sure that, you know, it is a unique lab classification and certification. And that's where you have like your physicians or your mid-levels or, you know, certain providers who are looking under the microscope for like a wet prep or whatever. And there are, you know, things that you need to make sure that you're doing in terms of assessments and quality control and all the fun stuff. So, you know, if the listeners are thinking, gosh, I do have a wet prep, but I have no certificate and I've never done anything for CLIA, I would suggest taking a pause and I'll send some links for you guys to have some simple resources that you guys can go to and kind of, you know, take a look at. And of course, if there's any questions about any of this stuff, I'm always available to answer a quick question.
So, couple of follow-ups to that. Number one, if I do a CLIA wave test, do I need to have a dedicated space for that quote unquote lab? And no. If I have, well, hold on a second. And if I have, let's say I do UAs in my office or urine drug screens, do you know, do I need to have, according to CLIA, is there a requirement to have a clean and dirty utility, or is that an OSHA thing, or it's really up to my office? Because as people think about, you know, office space in a private practice, things like having a clean and a dirty utility space can be problematic if they haven't planned for it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recall that being in CLIA, so I'm not going to make a comment to that. I will say this, in terms of good laboratory practices, you want to be able to separate out your clean and your dirty spaces because you don't want to contaminate anything. So I don't recall it being something specific on the CLIA, you know, per se for waived tests. It's just good clinical lab testing management, right?
Absolutely.
That's my thought.
And I actually think that there is an OSHA requirement. I just was unclear as to whether there was truly a CLIA requirement.
I don't recall if there is, but I can look that up and maybe put that in the show notes if that is. But I don't recall that being specific for CLIA. There's so little that is on the waived side for CLIA management, but you do want to have good laboratory practices. You do want to have good policies and procedures that walk you through the appropriate steps. So if the package insert says X, Y, and Z, that you're making sure that your staff are trained in following that.
So to that end, I know that with certain CLIA certificates, there's an inspection, right? And I think you'll come back and talk about that here in a second. But for, since we're talking about CLIA waived tests, once I get this CLIA waiver, is somebody coming to my office for an inspection? Do they ever just drop by? Who's going to actually verify that we're doing the right thing? I mean, don't get me wrong. We should always all be doing the right thing. I'm not advocating for anything other than that. But because I'm sure there are listeners who are out there thinking to themselves, well, I'll get this form. Who the heck is going to know whether I did it or I didn't do it? Are they coming to visit us?
Technically, no. I mean, I guess if you got a complaint, they could, and they would. Complaints are taken very seriously, but nobody's going to show up. They're not going to be inspecting you. Billing gets a little complicated if you don't get to have your CLIA license, even if you're billing for rapids and waived tests. So you do, that is something that you drop on your claims when you do billing for laboratory tests.
So I was going to ask that because I know that there are some CLIA waived tests that I hear from folks, oh, I can't get this paid for. And one of my realizations when we drill down as to why they can't get paid for it is because they don't have that CLIA waiver. So yes. I think it's very important to really point out that even if nobody's coming to check whether you have one, when you try and bill for that test, it becomes an issue.
Yeah, there's a little spot where you put your CLIA certificate number. So that is important from a billing perspective. So, you know, that's another checks and balances that they have. So you do want to make sure that you have that and that it's filed and that you're doing those research and paying the fees for those certificates.
It's always about paying the fees when it comes to this. So let's switch gears for a second because I want you to put on your kind of the billing side of your hat and talk about CLIA waived tests and making money. I mean, I know that even before we get to the more sophisticated, should I start a bigger, better lab? Do I have the volume, which we can touch on? Let's just talk about what most people are doing, which is CLIA waived tests, right? Is it automatic that the insurance companies are going to pay for them? Do I need to get prior auth for them? Do I need to know if I have a large managed care component in my of my payer mix that maybe some of these people actually need to go to, let's say, Quest or LabCorp? How do I sort that out so I don't end up paying for the test kit only to not ever get paid for it?
So I'm going to stick in the realm of waived tests for now. We'll get to non-waived in a minute, where the Quest and the LabCorp stuff more often come into play. Waived tests, yes, you can have managed contracts and they can have preferences around Quest and LabCorp versus ARUP or your own laboratory. For the wave test, that's less of an issue. Now there are nuances around getting paid for that, right? You can't just be doing a rapid strep every single day and going, well, I'm going to get paid every day and it's going to be fine. There are nuances to each of your payer contracts to understand, does the patient qualify for those tests? Do they have the ICD-10 codes that say, yeah, that diagnostic test makes sense? And so those are some of the nuances that you'll want to make sure that, you know, you're actually doing the testing and you're documenting why you're doing the testing and you're dropping the right ICD-10 codes to get paid for that testing, that you have the CLIA certificate attached to those claims when those are necessary. So, you know, all of that is necessary in order to get paid for waived. You know, when you're thinking about, like, if you're a practice and you're trying to say, okay, I'm a pediatrics clinic, you know, do I want to insource this testing or not? Do I want to deal with the CLIA certificate? Am I going to get paid for that? There are ways that you can kind of make a pro forma and make a business case, really understanding, okay, what are the top three tests by volume that I'm sending out that I could use and really change clinical management with a rapid test? Because there is, you know, you want to make sure that you've got both the financial case and the clinical case and making sure that those make sense, right? Okay, so clinically, it makes sense to have a rapid strep. Clinically, it makes sense to have a rapid flu or a dipstick. Like, those things make sense. And typically, they're pretty inexpensive. So then you can kind of reach out to a few vendors and say, okay, what's the cost to bringing these in? And do I have the volume to support it? And that's an easy math exercise. You have to go through the math exercise, but it's a math exercise. And then you can look at your payer contracts or the Medicare fee schedule and say, what's the typical reimbursement for those tests, depending on what they are, right? And then again, it's a math exercise. Do I have the volume to get the discount from a vendor to then get the reimbursement? And does it make sense? And actually, a lot of vendors will help you with this. I will caution, though, they give the pretty numbers, right? They give the, well, if
optimistic.
Everybody, yes, they're very optimistic about reimbursement. Well, I mean, you're going to get reimbursed from everybody and everybody's going to pay for that. And okay, in an ideal world, maybe that's the case, but in reality, not likely the case. So you need to understand what your payer mix is. You need to understand, you know, what your fee schedules are and really be able to say, okay, yeah, I am going to get paid for these tests. And that's, I will say, it's typically less of an issue for the waived tests, more an issue with the non-waived tests for that getting more complicated, right? Those tests are more expensive. There's more managed contracts in terms of what tests you can offer in the office lab versus, you know, do they prefer you to send to LabCorp and Quest? Will that be out of network? I mean, some of those issues start to get into play depending on the testing that you're running, at the non-waived testing, I should say.
Well, and I think the corollary to that is you have to do a postmortem.
Yes.
So once you've decided based on the pro forma, hey, this is a great idea, let's bring this test in, then you need to be checking on a monthly basis your reports. Okay, run a report, buy that test CPT, look at the ICD-10s. Am I actually getting paid? Am I getting paid what I thought I was going to get paid? If it turns out that you don't have the right ICD-10s, you know, am I doing tests on inappropriate people, or is it that I have a coding issue and maybe I'm not using the best ICD-10 for this test? But it's not like you say, oh yeah, this looks like this is going to be a win, and you start doing it and then you forget about it. You know, really for the next, you know, 6 months to a year, every single month you want to look at this and see, am I getting paid? Who's paying me? How much are they paying me? Does it match with what my contract says? And then even when you see that you are getting paid, the kicker here is you want to check periodically, at least quarterly, those same reports, because you may be getting paid by Blue Cross today and Blue Cross may change their policy in 6 months. And all of a sudden they're not going to pay for that. The other thing is that, and I think, Heather, you can speak to this better than I can, but I have personal experience where this test that I bought, this, you know, urine drug screen cup, was CLIA waived. And we've been buying this cup and buying this cup and buying this cup, and all of a sudden, we're not getting paid. Why? because that cup is no longer CLIA waived because they switched it out for some other cup, and now this cup is CLIA waived. Okay, if you are not checking your reports on a monthly basis, you're not going to catch that, because the company, the vendor's not who you're buying the cups from, doesn't call you to say, hey, we're no longer CLIA waived. I'm laughing at myself because, you know, this happened. This happens.
Yeah. So a couple things. So yes, you have to stay on top of those vendor notifications. They typically will send an email or a letter when something like that changes with an FDA clearance or you know, CLIA change like that. However, if that's gone to an admin's email box, then that admin's no longer there. That email person, you know, I mean, it's easy for that stuff. My recommendation, and I know this is silly, is to have like a single email box that like all your lab stuff can go to, that multiple people have access to, because then if Susie leaves because Susie's decided to retire, you know, you're not relying on Susie's email being attached to all of your CLIA stuff. Like, have it go to a general mailbox. I know that's silly, but it's just something that I'm, you know, a fan of. Back to your question regarding billing. So as part of this pro forma exercise, right, you're looking at your volumes, you're looking at your vendors, you're looking at, you know, what is it going to cost for you to do this test? Okay, what's it, what do I think the reimbursement's going to be? Before you even go live, you need to sit down, if you have in-house billers, sit down with them. If you have outsourced billers, sit down with them and just get a feeling from them around some of those ICD-10 nuances that are there for certain tests, so that you know that ahead of time and you can make sure that all of your providers know, okay, we need to document, you know, the right thing in the chart, you know, because say you're doing a whole bunch of strep, but you forgot to say that, you know, you looked in the throat and, you know, that the patient had signs and symptoms of strep and you're just doing a whole bunch of strep tests, then that you're not going to get paid for it, right? You don't have the right ICD-10 codes to qualify for it. You don't have the clinical documentation. So everybody needs to be on the same page. And again, that's good clinical medicine. This isn't rocket science. So hopefully you're documenting these things anyway. But I've seen practices where they're like, well, but I thought, you know, you could infer that. And it's like, well, we actually can't, you know, billing is actually less about clinical medicine and is more about your documentation and your coding. We all know how to be good doctors, right? We all went to medical school. We all, for the most part, show up every day because we want to provide good clinical care. It's the documentation piece that is what equates to good billing, and then of course a good billing process. So,
well, and I would counter that the other part of that is the overutilization. If yes. You do a strep test on everybody who comes in, they will ultimately audit your documentation. Mm-hmm. Because, okay, everybody, every insurance company, including Medicare, is tracking your utilization of a CPT code as compared to everybody else in the community. So that's no different for labs. If you are doing, you know, a strep test on everybody who comes in and you submit, let's say your clinic sees 300 patients a month and all 300 get a strep test, a rapid strep test, that's a red flag.
Correct. Correct.
Right. Or you do it every time you see that patient. Again, correct. You know, cannot be that.
And that's for modifier 25s, that's for lab tests, that's for 99214s. I mean, it's for everything. So, you know, you kind of got to find that sweet spot of, you know, obviously doing things and billing for things correctly. I'm never a fan of undercoding just to be safe, but you've got to just make sure that you're doing the right thing for the patient and billing for it appropriately.
So in terms of things that, you know, and I think that while everybody does the right thing, I think labs sometimes tend to lend themselves to overutilization because it's an easy thing that the physician doesn't actually have to do, right? All they have to do is order it and somebody else does it. And sometimes they forgot that they did it the last time, right? But I want to talk about other ideas that I know people have about ways in which lab can help leverage them, even doing CLIA wave. So one of the things I hear a lot is, can I get paid for venipuncture? Should I put a LabCorp quest person in my lab? Will that help me make money? I'm sending out these labs anyway. Is there a way for me to harness income from that?
You have to be very careful with this whole bill for venipuncture thing. There are some OIG regulations that came out. We actually across our system stopped doing that, meaning we're not billing for that. You know, if it's a send out test, it's more of a patient courtesy thing. So if you want to bring in LabCorp and Quest because you have a high number of providers and you want to help patients being able to have a one-stop shop, they come in, they get their blood drawn, the labs go out to LabCorp Quest, that's great. But there were some very specific OIG regulations that came out regarding venipuncture, and I can attach those to the show notes so the readers can listen to it, but I would not use that as an opportunity for increasing income. Do it as a patient satisfier, a good partner, but don't expect that to be a revenue generating. I think that there are some very specific OIG regulations against that. I'm not going to speak to those directly because I'm not an expert, but I just know that there are a lot of laws around that, kickback and all kinds of things. And so I would just recommend reading those OIG regulations before going down that pathway. Now, LabCorp and Quest do know those rules. So they now sometimes their sales team gets excited, but you know, I would really look at the OIG regulations before you decide to kind of go down that rabbit hole.
Well, and my impression is that venipuncture is not reimbursable pretty much across the board. And to your point that usually when LabCorp or Quest come to visit and say, hey, we can put somebody here, it's because they already understand they're going to get enough business that they're willing to put that person in your office.
Correct.
So, which brings me back to non-CLIA waive tests and opportunities for practices to leverage themselves, because obviously, you know, there are folks out there thinking, oh, if I have a bigger, better lab, if, you know, let's say I'm an endocrinologist and I'm, you know, running all of these more extensive labs, or I'm a pain doctor and I want to do GC verification of a UDS, you know, at what point does it make sense? Because obviously, one of the things you alluded to is that a CLIA non-wave test comes with a whole bunch of additional regulations and additional staff requirements. And how do I figure out, hey, this is worth doing or maybe not?
You know, I think that comes back to the business pro forma, and we do this in our own business. Business pro formas are a big deal. You can't just be like, well, I think I do a lot of those and I think that I'll be fine. There are a lot of very specific regulations when it comes to what's called highly complex tests. So think about your GC mass specs, right? So if you're pain clinic or a chemistry analyzer where you're running endocrine tests, those are highly complex. Those require very specific rules and regulations around your medical director, your staff that are running them, how often you're going to get inspected, your proficiency testing. And I do want to touch on that in one second and define what proficiency testing is. But quality control, like all of those things, and even and those things even come into play in a moderately complex test. And so whenever you're getting into the non-waived category, I'm going to just moderate or highly complex, you really want to make sure that you're understanding the regulations. And if you're like, I don't have time to learn those, I don't know those, you need to get a consultant. And don't mess around with thinking, I'll just go to the vendor and the vendor's going to just do it for me. Because I have seen multiple labs, physician labs, where the vendor comes in, they drop off the instrument, they help you, you know, validate 20 patients or whatever. And they're like, oh, you're good to go. And the policies and procedures aren't done. The medical director doesn't have the right qualifications. The laboratory staff isn't doing the quality control. You're, you know, doing the wrong process proficiency testing. Again, all of those things can be overcome with a laboratory person who can come in and kind of help you get set up. And they don't necessarily need to be the person who's running, you know, everything all the time, especially for a moderately complex test. You can have, you know, nursing staff or whatever run those. But if you don't have the policies and procedures and you don't have the quality measures set up appropriately, it's one, not good for patient care. Two, you're going to get dinged, and you just don't want to be in that situation. So have an expert come and help you. You know, you can find lab consultants who can come in there and do that. It's really not that hard. I've got some recommendations for people that we've used over the years. So again, do it right from the start.
And so you talked about being a medical director. Can the average doc be a medical director, or does it have to be a pathologist like you?
It depends on the complexity of the test. So moderately complex tests, you're going to have a lot more leniency on having a regular medical director be a medical, you know, your regular doctors. Now, there are some very specific education requirements around that and experience requirements. And I'll attach those to the show notes because I don't know them by heart. But for a highly complex test, it typically does need to be a pathologist or somebody with enough experience in the clinical laboratory setting. And so that's, you know, your GC mass spec, you know, your really true molecular testing, like your PCR testing for COVID, for example. And, you know, I know that there's some moderately complex, you know, molecular tests for COVID, but I'm talking about like the true real-time PCR.
And I think one thing that I'll point out is that when you're putting together this pro forma of how much is it going to cost you to do this test versus how much are you going to get, if you need a pathologist, if you are not the person who's going to be that medical director, you can certainly find a pathologist, just like you can find a teleradiologist who will read an MRI for $40. You can find a pathologist who will oversee and sign off on a, you know, per test basis where you don't have to necessarily hire them full time for your practice, but there is a cost involved in it. And you have to calculate that into the mix.
Yeah. It's typically $2,000 to $3,000 a month. So it's not cheap. And again, you know, and they can help guide you and get the right stuff, you know, moving, but then you have to have somebody who's managing quality every day. And that's typically even not your medical director. The medical director is overseeing and making sure, but they're not in the building, making sure that, hey, we had these 5 rejected specimens. Did we document that? Why were they rejected? Did we manage that appropriately? When you get into that non-waived category, the quality assurance policies and procedures set up into place and making sure that the staff are adhering to those is very important to keep your CLIA certificate in good standing. And I do want to, I touched on proficiency testing. I think this is important for the folks to understand because I don't think it's always very clear. So there's proficiency testing requirements. So this is basically being able to say, I have an external specimen and that external specimen, I am, you know, making sure that my assay, my test is accurate. And so proficiency testing is a way, it's called an external assessment, is a way for you to clarify that your testing is accurate. And there's companies that, you know, CAP and API that give you proficiency testing samples. One of the number one things I see with small physician office labs is they don't have the right proficiency testing menu. And then they have tests, samples that are coming into their lab. And because they don't do a portion of the test or because they may be part of their algorithm, they send out to LabCorp Quest for confirmation. They do that with a proficiency testing sample. Major ding, you cannot refer out proficiency testing samples. And again, this is for moderately complex and highly complex areas that you're going to have proficiency testing or external assessment requirements. And so this is just one of those nuances. Again, for the listeners on the phone, if you don't know what I'm talking about, that's okay. You just need to make sure that someone in your lab or someone in your office is understanding these regulations and is adhering to things like proficiency testing, quality control. Because, you know, again, once you kind of get into that moderate or highly complex world, the non-waived world, these are regulations that are important both from a patient care perspective as well as from a regulatory perspective.
See, I would have a different spin on this. And that is, if you are the practice owner, you actually do need to understand this. So yes, while you can delegate this to a medical technologist who does the day-to-day running of your lab, if you are doing something more than a CLIA waived and you are doing moderate or high and you have all of these requirements, sure, you will have a medical technologist, you'll have a medical director, whether it's you or it's a pathologist, but ultimately, you, the practice owner, actually have to know and oversee the rules, because otherwise, okay, when the rubber meets the road, it's still your responsibility. And so the last thing you want is an inspector to show up, have them say, oh no, this is not right. My medical technologist said we were doing this right is not an excuse. Okay. So I really, Heather, don't want to give people the out that they can, because, you know, when you run your own practice, you're so busy doing so many, wearing so many different hats, managing so many different components of this. And yes, this is where establishing a team and having each team member be responsible for their portion. And in this case, it would be whoever is over your lab. But ultimately, you, the practice owner, still have to manage the managers of each of your teams.
Yeah. And if you're the medical director, you know, that's certainly, you have to know every piece of this. If you've delegated the medical directorship, you know, I do agree with you. It is important for you to get at least high level, understand what are the requirements. Am I meeting those, you know, taking a look at those quality documents, you know, your lab, if it's a non-waived lab, should be having some sort of, you know, quality measures that they're measuring every month, every quarter, et cetera. And so being able to sit down and understand, are we meeting these, is a very good habit to get into. And if you're a medical director, then you got to know everything.
Oh, absolutely. Because, well, and if I've outsourced being the medical director and I'm paying $2,000 to $3,000 a month, that's my expectation of you, right? Because yeah, ultimately you're the person who's going to communicate with whatever CLIA inspector shows up.
Yeah. I, if I'm medical director, I'm showing up on site, especially if it's a lab I'm overseeing locally. And you know, you're having to really manage things. You know, the other piece I'll say, and then I promise I'll stop, is training competency. You know, competencies have to be done in a very specific way. And again, I'm talking non-waived labs. There are very specific regulations when it comes to how we measure competency. So what I mean by competency is being able to say, I've got a staff member, I've trained them, and are they competent to do their job? Do they understand the test? Are they following the policies and procedures? And so, you know, competency is not just something where I can say, hey, Susie, I saw her run that, you know, molecular Cepheid test, and she, I think she did a good job. It showed the right answer. So we're good. Check. It is more involved than that. And so, you know, again, it just comes down to, if you're going to get into this space, get a consultant or have somebody who really understands lab, help educate the team and get you guys set up in the right way. You know, there's a lot of consultants that will come in and help you set up the lab. And then also kind of on a quarterly basis, make sure that, you know, your staff understand what's going on. Everybody's doing it the right, another set of eyes, and having a medical director that really understands the lab space is important. This is, in that non-waived area, it's, you know, there are things that you need to follow, and it's not hard. It's just, you got to know it.
So I think in summary, you know, a couple of takeaways here. Number one, you can, in a small practice, do CLIA waive tests very easily. And getting a CLIA waiver is a relatively easy process first. Number two, there are lots and lots and lots of CLIA waive tests. So if you're looking for ways to increase what your practice is offering, look at the list of CLIA waive tests, see what is clinically appropriate to add to your practice, right? Things that you may be missing, because that would be potentially a way to actually generate more revenue for clinically necessary procedures or lab tests. Number three, if you didn't hear the message clearly enough, once you step up from a CLIA waive test to a moderate or high complexity test, the requirements become very stringent. The other thing that I think we didn't get to, and hopefully Heather will come back and we'll talk about this another time, is the fact that once you get to moderate and high complexity tests, number one, a lot of them can be sent out. And so then all of a sudden you have competition with the LabCorps and the Quests of the world that have already networked or contracted with the various insurances. So not only are there more requirements, does it require more staff? Is it more involved? But it's also going to be harder from a billing perspective, because you need to know, does this patient's insurance require that this test be sent to a specific lab vendor, or can I do it in-house? Okay. And so, you know, once you start thinking about stepping up to that moderate or high complexity test, understand that you have to truly have enough volume. That comes back to Heather's point about that pro forma, to actually justify bringing on all of that extra work, all of that extra expense, the expense of the consultant, potentially the expense of the medical director, if it's not you, the expense of the additional staff you're going to need, because it's not just an MA. And so if you're talking about probably three or four samples a day, or three or four samples a week, I will tell you without a pro forma, and I'm thinking Heather's going to agree, that the math is probably not going to work in your favor. And so to that end, you know, focus initially on things that are easy, okay? And as your practice grows and as that volume grows, then we can come back and really evaluate at what point does it make sense to contemplate adding those more complex tests. Is that a fair summary, Heather?
Agreed. And, you know, we can certainly come back and talk more about, you know, the LabCorp and Quest and payer preferences and out-of-network fees, because that does get a little bit tricky when you have tests that say or are more complex. And that is important for you to understand. I do think it's probably too much to dive into today, but all great points. And again, you know, really the pro forma to me, I mean, I do this in my personal life, right? We have a pro forma for everything. You've got to understand the numbers. Math is very important when you're running a business.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Please be sure to sign up for my newsletter below. I'll be sending you tips on how to start a practice, grow a practice, and then add multiple services so that you can maximize your revenue.